After 13 weeks, we at last reach Journey's End in the series finale of Doctor Who, and indeed of a podcast of impossible things. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Peter Bell.
I'm Caleb Woodbridge.
And I'm Swinton Dobson.
In keeping with the bringing everyone back theme, we have the prophecies of James Willetts, one of our co-commentators, who disappeared off to a parallel dimension called Birmingham earlier in the series, but recorded a number of comments about the series finale, which we will attempt to drop in his prophecies at opportune moments, Dalek Khan style.
Hello, this is James Willetts.
Whether or not they actually make any sense.
If I'm not back in time for the season finale, here we go. Oh wow, Davros, how surprising. Russell T. Davis is using Daleks as the bad guy. Again. Core, didn't see that one coming. I want an action figure of Billy Pipe with a gun. That's all I can ever think about.
So, listen out for those.
Indeed.
So, we have at last come to the end, and what did you think of this week's episode?
I was expecting the worst, because I'm cynical like that, so I was pleasantly surprised when it wasn't absolutely dreadful, but after the space of about 12 hours and the dust had settled and I'd had time to look back and revise it, it really didn't stand up, and I'm increasingly disappointed with it, to be honest. I haven't even rewatched it at this point. I think it was trying to do too much, the story was too simplistic, and there wasn't the dramatic payoff that I'd been hoping for at the end.
What a surprise! Peter didn't enjoy it!
I was expecting it to be the greatest hits version of Doctor Who of Russell T. Davis's. However, instead, it seemed like a band had reformed and trying to ape the success of previous years and failing miserably. As opposed to having a greater hits version, which I was expecting.
That's a good analogy, actually.
Well, I try.
What a surprise! Swithin didn't enjoy it.
I enjoyed it.
What a surprise! Caleb enjoyed it.
I thought it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of action and explosions, and I cheered with when, for example, K-9... turned up, but I wasn't convinced it was any good. It was certainly playing to the crowd, and there were a lot of good moments, but I don't think it pulled together as a story. I think there were lots of elements that were disappointing, that copped out on previous things set up in the previous episode, and I felt it was probably the weakest season finale story ending thus far.
That's saying a lot, isn't it?
who'd have thought that Russell T. Davies could have made Last of the Time Lords look restrained? I did enjoy it, but it was more for its fan-pleasing moments rather than its qualities as a well-constructed piece of storytelling.
It did feel like a giant piece of official fanfic, really.
Yeah.
At times, you're sitting there thinking, there's absolutely no reason for this to be happening, you're just ticking boxes, Russell.
But I reckon we should start now. There's lots to go for
65
minutes.
It's a bumper episode, isn't it? So we'd better plough on. So if you're watching along with the podcast, press play now. A brief recap of last week.
Earth has disappeared. Oh, and the Daleks.
The big money shots get played again.
Yeah.
Ooh, CGI. I like the visuals.
Yes, exterminate torturers. We agree. Kill them all. Disembowel them on television.
Dalek Supreme wants his license fee money back.
He's seen Cyberwoman as well.
Oh, and the Doctor is going to regenerate. But of course he's not, because we would have known that because we've been replaced.
In fairness to them, I really was expecting the regeneration scene to lead to something completely unexpected. They could have done absolutely anything with it. They didn't in the end.
Yeah, but we always knew David Tennant was going to be the Doctor at the end.
Oh, yes, we knew that much, but I thought they really could have had fun with an alternative parallel Doctor, which they did to an extent, but I thought a different actor is the Doctor in this episode.
Well, it would have been a brilliant way of hiding the fact that David Tennant was leaving if you had you're still filming with him, because there was the parallel version played by David Tennant plus a new Doctor.
Yes, that would have been very clever.
But as we guessed,
yes, the hand
for several of us, the hand is used to ground the regeneration energy.
See, at this moment, I was already feeling cheated because I was convinced that was going to be it.
Why does Russell T. Davies always fail to resolve those good cliffhangers? We may never know.
Oh,
Jackie Tyler wielding a big gun.
Yeah, and shooting it straight up into the air and still managing to shoot the Dalek for some reason.
Well,
she wasn't aiming anywhere near it.
It's like some of these computer games where you don't have to aim, it just fires at the enemies for you. Oh dear.
And cop out number two.
We have the time bubble. Was it the time bubble?
Or the time lock.
Yeah, it's nicking, as if for Matrix style bullets in the air. Yeah.
Yes.
I was running Max Payne with bullet time.
This is a good point, I think, to raise a question that I had last week and I forgot to raise. The Daleks appear to have lost their defensive shielding. Mm. If you notice, whenever anyone shoots at the Daleks, you get sparks and ricochets flying off the casing. Now, originally, the bullet-melting shield was a cost-cutting measure because the mill didn't have the time, the people, or the money to keep putting sparks and reflections on the Dalek casing. So they just invented this shield to do away with that problem. Now that the effects budget has also been upped somewhat, we've got ricochets going off all over the place, but does this mean the Daleks aren't shielded anymore?
I don't know, but I wish they'd spend that budget on better writers.
Yes.
But that's another issue entirely.
Or a script editor.
Yeah,
who will at some point sit down and say, Russell, what on earth are you doing?
But Russell has just announced he's never writing for Doctor Who again.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which, in the same way that he was never bringing back the Daleks, we were never seeing Rose again.
Well, yeah, I'm hoping this is the case, because Russell does remain one of the strongest writers for the series, I think. And so I will be very disappointed if, in a couple of years, once Stephen Moffat has established himself, he doesn't come back to end scripts like Turn Left, like Midnight, like many of his stories, which have been very good.
Yes, I know, I agree entirely. And I think he's still got an awful lot to contribute to the series, and perhaps without the extra burden of executive producer, he will be able to commit to some really, really good scripts and have some fun with them.
And here we have the TARDIS being tractor beamed.
That was quite nice. We're seeing the Daleks do something new, and we actually see them effectively being more powerful than the Time Lord technology.
Yeah.
Because the TARDIS always had been that impenetrable fortress as far as the Daleks were concerned, haven't they?
Yeah, I can't remember any of the times in which any enemies actually.
I like the little eye stalks all popping up.
Yes, I thought that's quite.
I loved the space imagery of. Give it a great sense of scope and very cinematic.
Yes.
And Murray's brought his choir back as well.
They revised the push button thing.
Yes, because in Doomsday they seemed to work instantaneously. Pete Tyler could jump across to grab Rose and immediately back again.
Yes. And now they've. Yeah, it takes, 20 minutes to recharge?
30. I mean, it's understandable that they'd want to stop them being used.
Mm.
It's a easy get out. Nice little touches.
Back with Free Miragemon and her mum, who plays absolutely no role in this whatsoever, other than to say, hello, I'm Martha's mum.
And I was in Doctor Who.
Yes.
Remind me, I am back.
But again, I have to say, apart from the occasionally over-earnest emoting, it's very good to see Martha being given something concrete and credible to do. I think she's of the companions, she's got the meatiest role, really.
In this, yeah.
And this bit in Germany, or...
The German Daleks.
I thought this was a stroke of genius.
I didn't know whether to laugh or cry at this bit.
And this is a really nice shot of them going through the moonlit forest.
In fact, I was thinking the other day that a moonlit chase on foot through darkened forest being chased by a Dalek spouting German would have been a fabulous set piece. But I live in hope. I leave it to the unofficial fan fiction to take care of that. But no, I mean, all credit to Freem Rajaman. I thought she really pulled her role off well.
Well, here we go, we have the big revelation now from Rose, which is not very much really. What do we think of Billy Piper in her return? She doesn't really do very much, does she?
No, I was expecting her to have a bigger role, or just something a bit more interesting. It's never really explained how she can do all this dimension hopping. She just seems to come in to fulfil a plot function and doesn't seem to. You don't get the same sense of her character as you did before.
It's not even a particularly significant plot function, is it? It's a little bit of exposition here and there.
But you'd expect it to be due to the fact she was just like hammered home that she was going to be in.
And the TARDIS is taken into the Death Star.
By its tractor beam.
Not seen that before, have we?
I didn't think the interior set of the Crucible was quite as good as the interior set for the Dalek mothership at the end of Series 1, actually. The bit that little section that we saw with the Daleks looking out over the Emperor's throne room. This just looked a little grungier, a little darker, and didn't have the same scope, somehow. But again, I do like the explanation by the Doctor that the Daleks can come in into the TARDIS at any time they want. And
it's effectively just wood.
Yes.
Ooh, sounds like she's going to have a heart attack. No, she's not. Unfortunately.
Yes. Donna hearing the phantom heartbeat. Although, why she couldn't have been hearing that earlier in the series if they wanted to foreshadow what was going to happen, I don't know.
I don't really know. Maybe she's got a bad hearing. You could have a good plug for a hearing aid at this point, couldn't you? Mm. Hearing aid!
Yes,
hearing aid.
I thought they missed a trick here. They could have had Captain Jack step out pretending to be the Doctor newly regenerated because he can't be killed.
Yes, that's true.
That's a good idea. Everybody did use his not dying nature.
Yes.
It's very rare in Torchwood that they actually use Jack's his indestructibility as a useful plot device. Mm. Instead they usually just use it as an excuse for him to get shot a lot and then get up again.
Blimey, boy. Mm. Here we go. Maurice drumbeat again. Trying to ape some kind of progressive metal somehow.
Yeah, I didn't
think it very well.
This is very reminiscent of the end of Series 1 with the Doctor, Jack and Rose step out inside the Dalek mothership, but I didn't feel any of the same sense of trepidation or danger here that they had then. Yes, we've got a lot of flying Daleks.
Okay, so it's like we're inside the vortex of a bagless vacuum cleaner. It's circulating.
Or a giant bingo machine. There's a number on each of the Daleks.
Now the TARDIS door closes. Why? We don't know. And nobody tells us.
There is no readily apparent reason for it, is
there? Well, I think it's always the mark of desperation on the part of a writer when you need prophecy or destiny to invoke those as explanations for a whole load of coincidences and things that need to come together. It's usually a mark of desperation. In my novel, fantasy novel I'm writing at the moment, I'm resisting the temptation for the prophecy cliché, even though I know it would be terribly useful in moving all the characters and so on into position for where I want to get them.
We've just had another little Star Wars moment as the TARDIS plunges towards the core of the Death Star. Crucible, you know, narrowly avoiding pipes and things on the way.
It looks like the centre of it, doesn't it? And that's like the energy field, which is actually... I like this bit. You have the TARDIS being blown up from the inside.
Yes, yeah, that's quite
nice. Have you seen that before?
No, well, not in the TV series. A couple of the comics, I think, where the TARDIS has come close to destruction all around or shatter and explode. But I don't remember seeing damage to the TARDIS interior later on in the episode. I might be wrong, but I'll have to keep an eye open for that.
Great high acting from David again.
Yes.
Lots of high acting.
Plenty of gloating from Ian Briggs.
Oh, yes.
Who's obviously having fun.
He's most fun of anybody in this episode.
Yeah. Nick Briggs does a great job.
Nick Briggs, sorry, not Ian Briggs. What am I saying?
Great job of the Dalek voice.
He must have some deal with Russell T. Davis, because of course he gets paid whenever the Daleks are around. He must whisper in Russell's ear, going, "Russell, have a really big Dalek finale. Yeah, millions of them."
Oh. Just close up on the ring, interestingly. There was some theories going around.
Oh, did she pick up the Master's ring at the end of the Last of the Time Lords? Why should be near a funeral pyre? I have no idea.
I was hoping for something a little more dramatic than him just panting a little. Yeah, actually, yeah. Writhing around in pain would have been good.
And here we see the hand. The doctor grew a hand, and now the hand grows a doctor.
Yes, or not really the doctor, it's the half-human doctor.
Implies that the doctor has never been half-human. So take that... 1996 TV movie.
Yes. I noticed it started a small avalanche of theories and counter-arguments on the web forums. Which you'll no doubt be familiar with if you listen to this.
And also with countdowns, you always get away before the end. Yep.
Yeah, it's not really explained how, if the TARDIS has been disabled, he's able to... escape there.
Yes. Prophecy, destiny, it's fine.
Yes. And why the Daleks don't notice that it's actually just dematerialised when it even made the noise and didn't just disintegrate.
They just don't do the homework these days, do they?
They're a bit lazy. So... see, not even Dalek Supreme has got a shield.
I do like the effects when they kill people. Well, they don't kill Chuck, obviously.
Well, they kill him, he just comes back to life.
Well,
yeah, oh, one of the companions has died.
We told you one was going to die! What are you going to do?
And it was nice that Rose, at this point out, that Rose doesn't realise that Jack is immortal, but nobody actually seems to bother explaining what's happening to him.
It's her doing.
John Barrowman liking a bit too much winking at David Tennant. He's on the floor.
He seems to have done a few quick repairs here.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
This was a nice little scene.
Yes,
in fairness to the actors. Just picking up each other's mannerisms. Can't be an easy job to do, but they do it very well. I love that hat, and then you touched it. Wow! And we finally have an end to the Hand in a Jar saga, which has practically been a spin-off in his own right. Right,
watch it, Frank. Boy, watch it, girl. Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Get Donna's theme again. Well, technically it isn't, but it's become it.
Yeah.
So what do you think of this idea of Donna inadvertently making the Doctor a different one?
I think that's okay. I know that it was explained the first time around, but I can't remember for the life of me why it needed Donna to actually trigger the hand.
That's what my biggest complaint is. Donna is special. No, she's not. She's just in the right place at the right time.
Maybe that's all you need.
Mickey there and it would have worked.
It would have given Mickey something to do.
It's true, but I've got a big gun and fire at people.
I do, but it is a nice little harking back to the idea that... there was a line in the Christmas Invasion when the Doctor had very first regenerated that was cut, I believe. I'm not sure if it was ever actually filmed. The idea being that the Doctor had lost his northern accent because being close to Rose when he'd first regenerated, she'd imprinted a bit of her Cockney accent on him. And so he'd taken something from her in regenerating. So, again, even though it's not officially part of continuity because it never appeared in the episode, it's been talked about quite frequently by Russell T. Davis and some others. So we're seeing it sort of fully developed here, I suppose.
One of many flashback sequences in the story.
And why is meeting her granddad have any relevance to Donna in terms of cosmic coincidence and fate?
It's a bit of a coincidence that he should just happen to meet her grandfather.
Nah. And it's not a coincidence that she met the Doctor again during the adipose incident, because she'd been actively tracking him now. So they're both there with precisely the same person.
Is it me? Or am I the only one?
Koch finally putting in a...
Yes, I'm amazed it's taken Castell Koch so long to make an appearance, actually. Castell Koch, for those of you listening along and not in the know, is the castle where the Osterhagen station is housed, ostensibly in Bavaria somewhere. It does look Bavarian.
It's a 19th century castle, interior designed by William Burgess, who did the Cardiff Castle interior as well.
Yes, and owned by the Marquess of Bute, isn't it, as one of his summer homes, and designed to look like a Bavarian fairy tale castle, much like the Neuschwanstein castle in Bavaria, the Neuschwanstein castle that Walt Disney based the castles in the Disney parks as well.
Just a point, was I the only one who's thinking Return to Castle Wolfenstein at this point? Because you've got the Dalek, you've got the Nazi kind of Dalek thing, and you've got the castle.
You've even got an Iron Maiden and Dusty Chandelier. Why is a modern day unit facility in Germany have an Iron Maiden? What on earth is
Bruce Dickinson's
going
to come out in tight spandex.
But it did make me think that a proper haunted castle story would be tremendous fun. With the Daleks.
Something you haven't seen since The Chase. Yes, you could do a really pastiche thing like I did in The Chase. Yeah. Genius.
You have some of the cheesiest dialogue in German. They are not the nightmare. You are!
Ah, right. So you guys are up to speed then.
One of our housemates is a linguist, and so is able to translate, as well as the translation being on the in the fact file on the website.
Right. Had she landed in France or Spain, I would have been fine. I think we should have a little montage sequence of Daleks chasing people across the world. So Daleks speaking Welsh, Daleks speaking Japanese.
But how are they going to do tonal languages?
Exterminate ya!
How are they going to do?
How are they going to speak tonal languages? It's going to be impossible. They wouldn't be able to speak Chinese, are they?
They could carry little placards on their sucker arms saying, "We are going to exterminate you." Cue cards.
Oh, they're going to incinerate Jack.
Yes. How do Daleks create garbage, exactly?
They don't seem to eat or produce any waste.
No. Well, it seems
the music is even beginning to try and sound a bit Wagnerian, just so we get the German Nazi point.
Mm-hmm. Not that we haven't got it already.
Yes.
Speaking German. Ah, that's the hobby. Now, is that looking like a little bay from where the guys control the big weapon on the Death Star? Oh, the ones with the helmet.
Looks a little bit like it. A return of the music from the end of Series 1 as well, the Game Station, which was quite a welcome return. Most familiar to me now from the menu screens of the DVD box set.
Oh, that's a really good shot. Again.
All credit to the mill. I don't think they've given us a single duff effect all series.
Oh, they've done very well. Now, is it me? Or is Davros gone slightly emperor from Star Wars?
Even when powerless, I can see what you mean.
If you look at the face. The face is fatter than normal, and it's a bit droopier, and it's slightly wider. And the way he's always going, "I have foreseen things," I'm thinking he's nicking...
Well, I just love that the circle of time is almost complete.
I think he's slightly trimmer than he was in, certainly, Remembrance of the Daleks, where his face really didn't seem quite elongated, and he had jowls like a basset hound. I was convinced he was going to say bitch then.
No.
Well, a Dalek bitch. Especially after the line about, ooh, they are the playthings of Davros. It makes it sound like some sort of S&M done.
Ooh, dear.
Half an hour in the vault with Davros will loosen your tongue.
Oh, maybe Max Mosley.
As I'm making my own fan fiction here.
And here we have Dalek.
Yes.
Nick Bridges having too much fun with his voice.
I like the similarity between the holding cells being the beam of light and the spotlight that the Doctor had to stand in the Daleks, the very first Dalek
Indeed,
story.
Indeed, they did.
Whenever they were interrogated, there was that beam of light.
Of the light, that's true. This is it.
But again, we're never quite told how that works. The Dalek Khan seeing the whole of time.
And we don't know why Dalek Khan sees the whole of time.
Yeah. If we'd just been told that the temporal shift had malfunctioned and ended up in the heart of the vortex, that would have been perfectly understandable.
One of them will die, though. It's another of these metaphorical deaths.
Yeah.
Which they seem rather fond of.
Do you think that... are you disappointed by the fact that Russell T. Davies has twice now promised us the death of a character and twice sort of skipped out on it?
Yes.
Do you think that the series, because admittedly it's supposed to be upbeat, it's supposed to be fun, and he said when he very first started that he would never kill a companion. Do you think that was a bad decision and he should actually have killed somebody off?
Yeah, I don't want him to kill, like, companions, like, all the time. But, I mean, if he says he's going to do it, he should do it. If he hadn't said he was going to kill it, I wouldn't have been that upset if one of them died. Although, to be fair, I would have liked most of the companions on a platter. But, I wouldn't have complained as much.
Yeah.
And but, here we have another MacGuffin, the reality bomb.
Yes, which they're testing.
This is quite nice, the very rocky feel to it, like the inside of some planet or something.
Yeah, so you get the impression that it might actually have been... That was a dreadful pratfall by the extra, by the way. This Indian woman has sort of tripped over. And this bit I don't get.
Dalek
Sarah Jane just walks off. Shouts to Mickey, who then follows her.
Because Daleks are obviously really slow now, because there's just the Uber Daleks.
Yeah, we've just seen an establishing shot with like 20, 30 Daleks all hovering around the place, surrounding these people, and two of the prisoners have just walked out of the holding area.
Maybe their vision is impaired, unlike last week.
You just get the impression they're all very, very lazy.
Was it me, or are they trying to ape kind of Massacre of Jews, Nazi, kind of gas? Like in Schindler's List?
Possible. It would have been... If that is the case, it would have been more effective had they had more than a dozen extras to kill.
Yeah, but that's what I was thinking. It could be coming with a Nazi theme.
Yes.
Although, we give no possible reason why they have to test a reality bomb on humans.
No.
But it doesn't really make any sense for them to preserve this atmosphere. Accept that you can't wipe out a...
Because then you'd have to have a really big reset button.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm left with the impression that the entire purpose of the Dalek invasion of Earth last week was to round up these 12 prisoners to test the reality bomb on. Was it really worth the effort?
Yeah.
Why did they invade?
They talk about the human harvest. I was disappointed because I was hoping for something... They had something a bit more interesting in store for the humans. They were harvesting.
No, testing, or I don't know. Trying to glean some more, like, survival advantage out of humans, similar to Evil of the Daleks type idea, or something like that. But... And his alarm clock has woken up. Time to wake me.
Someone getting a text.
Just use... Who's the transporter? Teleportation.
Peter managed to carry two. Oh no, he did bring a second one for Rosa.
Yeah. Big hug.
And what? Big voices. Which I actually quite liked, to be fair. Nice effects, again.
Yeah, the effects are okay.
Just kind of disappear.
It's, yeah, but there is no moral comeback from Jackie. She's ditched these prisoners. She was with them. They've run off and left them to their fate. And that's it.
There's no reaction.
There is absolutely no consequence to what they've done. They have no particular role to play from here on in. They're just there to witness what happens. But then the Doctor sees what happens on the screen anyway, so why were they there at all?
And now we have Davros revealing his big plan.
Yes.
And we have absolutely no idea why he's blowing everything either. Doesn't yes. slave anybody.
He gets a very good sort of megalomaniac speech, which seems to be a Davros staple now. He has to have at least one every
yes,
story
yeah,
that he hears.
Good point.
And this is one of his best, it has to be said. But why? Yes, why would he want to destroy everything?
Why can't... Was he not to control or enslave people to do something interesting with them? But no.
Yeah.
They just want to play Dalek-like spy. Yeah.
The Daleks won't be the dominant form of life in the universe, because there won't be a universe left. Yeah. They'll just be the Daleks stuck in the Medusa Cascade.
Well, they do want to be the only beings in existence, basically. Yeah. That is the logical conclusion of their ideology, but... but yeah, you'd think that he'd want some kind of universe for the Dalek Empire to build their own Dalek civilization. It does raise the whole question of what do they do next, which we'll come back to.
We will indeed.
they
won't be able to expand their empire. They won't be able to do anything new. They'll just be stuck in the Medusa Cascade. Speaking of the Medusa Cascade, Caleb and I mentioned last week how it was a bit of a disappointment that it was just a big wibbly-wobbly, greeny-blue thing. But it's been part of the prophecy of the Time War, and we've heard about it spoken in great reverential tones. And we learned that there was a rift in space and time there, and that the Doctor sealed it with his name, and that the Doctor's true name is hidden there. This isn't mentioned at all this episode. It has no relevance at all.
Maybe there's something else. Being subtle of trying to reveal his name has failed because it's not actually there at all.
Well, I know, but having had River Song sort of mention the relevance of his name to us already earlier in the series, I had been expecting it to come into play at some point at the end here.
Sarah Jane has a plot device.
Yeah, she has her very own MacGuffin that she carries around in her pocket and failed to mention until now.
Ooh, shiny, shiny.
Yes. It wouldn't have been so bad if we'd seen her pick it up when she left the house last week, and she'd said, I might need this.
Which
and then runs out.
Magic.
But no.
Yeah, it's yet another technobabble MacGuffin. As if the story didn't have enough of them.
It's nice to know that UNIT allow their female officers to wear so much makeup. She looks almost like a geisha doll. Really?
I don't think she'd get past the interviews, to be fair, to be a geisha doll. That's the matter entirely.
it's worrying, it really is. There's one more thing the
Doctor would do. Who's the higher authority?
I think she's referring to the Doctor.
Yeah.
But that's what the Doctor would do afterwards. It didn't seem to be...
Well, it's the whole that you have one chance thing, that rather than just blowing things up straight off, he does give people a warning.
Yeah, I did think that was quite nice, actually. You can see that she's actually sort of picked a couple of bits and pieces up from the Doctor, and they're
yes.
the better aspects as opposed to the grandstanding. I hope they release a kind of cuddly Dalek Khan for Christmas, and then when you squeeze it,
no, a Dalek
it gives
Khan.
You some sort of prophecy.
Dalek Khan water bottle.
Oh, that'd be really good.
Really?
Or a set of licensed bagpipes. You blow into the end of one of the tentacles, squeeze them, and just listen to him prophesize.
Now, would 25 nuclear warheads actually blow the Earth up?
No.
Why couldn't you put a zero on the end? It would have made it sound more plausible. It was just an easy thing to do. I was thinking, no, it's not going to work.
But what do you think about the whole...
Or something buried in the Earth's core.
Yeah. But what do you think about the whole idea of them having this thing?
I think it's quite
good.
It seems
the connection isn't made, but UNIT knows about the year that there ever was, because they had various people on board the Valiant.
Yes.
And so it seems an interesting carry through from that, that they might come up with a device.
And like it's a global sort of defence, if you can call it a defensive measure, against alien threats, which we haven't really been seeing thus far, although UNIT has had a bigger presence this series. And we've seen UNIT adapt more alien technology than Torchwood have in the last two series as well.
Yes.
So UNIT seems
Torchwood
to
just thick.
Torchwood don't seem to be playing any significant role at all anymore. It's just a showcase for Captain Jack to run around and be camp. Although he's good in this. He is. He's just sort of tongue-in-cheek and enjoying himself, which is fine.
I did like this.
The recognition of Sarah Jane.
Yeah.
Yes, that's good.
I was hoping they'd have this scene once I heard that Sarah Jane was coming back in the same story as Davros.
Yes, you had to get them together really, didn't you?
The circle of time is closing.
it was a bit Emperor-ish.
That's what I meant.
Now that you say it.
If we run out of time, it's just a time of winding through anyway. So.
That's true. Now, the Doctor and Rose have been locked up together for the past 10-15 minutes, and we saw him holding her hand in the control room earlier on. So I think we're supposed to make the connection that they are now Doctor and Companion again, and that they are the focus. Mm. But I'm really not getting the chemistry. It's not there at all, is it?
We haven't had much interaction between them.
She still seems to be phoning her performance in.
Well, I'm not sure that that's fair on Billy Piper. I think she's doing a good job, she's just not being given much to do.
That's true. Has there been any explanation as to what this organisation is that she's a part of that is zapping her from one dimension to another?
Parallel Tortured is what she's part of.
We were told she's part of that at the end of Series 2, and we're assuming it's the same group doing this. Do we know why they've developed these massive, great big guns that are capable of killing Daleks? And why Jackie has one?
Let's focus on the whole. I like the Doctor being brought up and all the people who have sacrificed themselves for him here. And it's quite an interesting point that Davros is making. I do think the whole heroic self-sacrifice thing is overused in Doctor Who. We've had quite a lot of this series, as you can see in that flashback. I think this is quite interesting, having the Doctor being challenged.
But he has an obvious comeback, which he doesn't deliver. I'm not trying to kill the main people, I'm trying to save them, and in so doing, people try to save me.
Yeah.
It's not as if they found his dodgy video collection or his bed or something, is it? You're going to see the soul of the Doctor.
I'm sure Torchwood are developing an episode around that very bad thing.
Oh dear.
I did like the fact that the Deus Ex Machina MacGuffins that have been set up all over the place were just suddenly undercut and undone, and they're all taken prisoner.
Yeah, because you've got three.
It's starting to look a bit easy.
Yeah, and you've also got the third one coming up in the moment.
Julian Bleach loved delivering that line, didn't he?
Julian Bleach is very good.
Oh, undoubtedly.
And he deserves more than he was given, I think.
This is really good. Everything does seem very desperate and
very Star Wars. Yes. Listen, I was a little disappointed that once he'd been introduced, Davros didn't do anything particularly unexpected. Mm-hmm. He was just the ranting megalomaniac behind the Daleks scheme.
Yes, because you have the whole, he hints at an arrangement.
Yeah.
But I'd have liked it if the relationship between him and the Daleks was explored and was a little more complicated. At least they didn't do the whole, oh well, they're using him until he's fulfilled his purpose and then they'll turn against each other, which has been done rather a lot, as in every Davros.
Just to the point, the parallel Doctor with his gun looks very similar to the one in Remembrance of the Daleks. One's uses to.
Oh, it does look very similar, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, the gun. Thing that Sylvester McCoy
this is
knocked up to disable the Daleks.
Rousing music. Yeah.
He's turned the floodlights on again.
The floodlights of drama.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't open it with a click of his fingers.
He's got a gun. Why isn't he shooting from there? Why does he have to run across the floor?
Because he wants to use a slow-mo.
It's silly. Davros rules.
When did we see the first zap out of Davros' hands?
Revelation. It's the first time. Yeah. I'm glad they kept that in.
Yeah.
And of course, the prosthetic claw is a hark back to that episode as well, when they shot his hand.
Indeed.
Shoot him with it, you silly one. Ah, never mind.
That's like a big perforated football up in the back. Like a light in the middle.
I was very glad when they did that as well, because I was convinced that was just going to be our third Get Out Claw. So well done to Rusty Davis for setting up a lot of very obvious Get Out Claws.
It's a bit like the gun of four parts in that series' finale.
Yes.
That was just stupid.
Here we are.
I like the casual. Oh yes.
He's got this dry wit that I think the Master should have had more of in the last series.
Two.
Excuse me.
And here comes the Donner ex machina.
Yeah. Dr. Donner. Reviewed.
Now, I wondered whether she was really Romana.
Oh, did you?
Oh. Yeah, I was thinking it was silly enough that they could actually do something as Spanish as that, that she'd been a Fogwatch Time Lady or something.
I was thinking that they'd been fooling us from the very beginning, and she was someone from the Doctor's future, or a surviving Time Lady of some sort.
Yeah.
Actually, thinking about it, not that far from the Romana theory, and that she'd just been playing dumb, effectively, for the entire series. But, no... This bit I was hugely disappointed about. It was terrible.
Yeah, I think the problem is that Donna only becomes like the Doctor in gaining the ability to turn any piece of technology into defeat the villain's button.
Yeah.
She doesn't...
She gains techno-babble and that's it.
Yeah, she doesn't gain any of the Doctor's... She doesn't do something particularly heroic and doctorish in that sense, and I think she needed to for this to work and for this to feel satisfying.
If she'd had some particular knowledge of Davros or been able to fly the TARDIS in a particular way, that would have been...
This needed to be the comeback to Davros's accusation that the Doctor just turns his companions into weapons. She needed to do something constructive and heroic.
She needed to do something as Donna, didn't she?
Yeah. Heroic. And it just feels unsatisfying because there isn't that heroic moral dimension to her actions. It is just technobabble. And technobabble can work if it serves the plot and the story.
Another point worth making is that she tells the other two that she's the only one who could have done this because she's half Time Lord, half human, and has human imagination, Time Lord abilities. But so does the other Doctor that grew from the Hand. He's half human, half Time Lord as well. So
anybody who would have been there at the same time would have been half human and half Time Lord.
Yeah.
She doesn't do anything special as Donna.
No.
She's just in the right place at the right time for a happy accident.
Yeah.
And that makes it rather unsatisfying.
Yeah. And the technobabble and all these other bits aside, there's no disguising the fact that the villains are defeated by standing in front of a console and pushing buttons, which is a horribly lazy, and it has to be said, horribly boring way
of overcoming your mortal foe.
Age of Steel
did exactly the same thing. Yeah. You can sit there and talk about evading firewalls and, you know, getting deep into the ground level code as much as you want. It's still just somebody tapping away at a keyboard, and it's not exciting at all. We need something better than this.
Then we get the Donna being even more irritating than she ever was in the Christmas Invasion at this point. Trying to spout babble.
Yes. I've been a fan of.
She goes glowy, as we predicted.
Yeah. There we go. You can't have a season finale without somebody getting all covered in CGI fairies.
At least it was fairly subdued glowiness.
Yeah, it was. Thoroughly unnecessary.
But very, very catchy.
As I've produced far worse already this week. I'm interested to see what the attachments the Daleks have in the background are there. Because they don't have the normal sink plunger. They have something that looks as if it's designed for making milkshakes, almost.
Because they have different attachments in the...
But we've got the twist here of Dalek Khan.
Yeah, that was quite good.
Having, like... Dalek Sek before him, having seen the evil of the Daleks. Not the sixth episode, but...
I want to see it! Really?
if we could do a temporal shift, then we could as well.
But, having decided that the Daleks shouldn't exist in the form they do.
Then why did he rescue Davros?
Because of the prophecy... the prophecy demanded it, i.e. the plot...
And the Dalek Supreme is ridiculously quickly dealt with, I think. He shoots at a control console, and then Jack shoots him, and that's it. And look, no damage at all to the TARDIS.
It's all been repaired.
Yeah, it's all spotlessly clean. Just, everything is... It's being reset without even openly being reset.
It's the end of everything, Dalek. No, I think they didn't use the reset button, so fair play to them.
Oh, you've set Swiss within a twitching here.
You didn't set the reset.
Not here.
Oh, right, not yet. But they do it later.
And now they destroy the entire Dalek fleet by, again, pushing some buttons.
I thought it would have been much more interesting if they'd had the... if they'd defeated the destroyed the Crucible and the Reality Bomb, but you still had the threat of this Dalek army out there waiting for a return appearance.
Yes.
That would have been more interesting.
It would have been a lot better.
Because, how many times have they completely wiped out the Daleks in the new series? In 4 years, they've done it more times than the original series did in 26.
And we know that in one of the specials or in the next series, 2010, a Dalek or an army of Daleks are going to turn up again. Davros, I hope, escapes. I think it's high time we got... a story with Davros as a standalone villain without the Daleks, actually.
That would be very good.
I think he's enough of a personality in his own right. He'd be interesting enough in his own right.
The Big Finish audio Davros is very good by Lance Parkin.
I've heard good things about it.
I've never listened to the I Davros stuff, but I believe that's pretty good.
Right. Mind you, Revelation of the Daleks is almost a story with Davros as a standalone villain, because the Daleks are practically incidental, aren't they?
Yeah, he's quite good in like the way the Renegades take him off for trial at the end.
He is collective. In fact, he has a bigger role in it than the Doctor, so he could be called the central character.
The Blue Doctor did a sort of cheeky grin to camera there, and Freema does a similar little smile to camera.
Maybe it's just a little nod to the parents watching going, yes, we know it's rubbish, but the kids enjoy it.
Oh, no, the worst family line ever about 8 Miles. Are you from a long-standing Cardiff family?
Yes. Yes. So, someone said that if Gary Russell had included this in the story, it'd have been strung up on the lamppost.
Yeah. There is absolutely no purpose for it at all, is there? It's just, oh, yes,
this story does remind me a bit of the Big Finish anniversary story Zagreus, where you have a rather overcooked story with too many returning characters that's got a lot of fun scenes but doesn't quite manage to pull together as a satisfying story in its own right.
K9 is here now as well. The last box is ticked.
Dog out of the machine. We have here.
No. See, K9 doesn't have any role in the series anymore, due to copyright reasons, other than to turn up at the very last minute and save the day, either by shooting at a computer or by plugging himself into it.
What's the copyright issues?
He's not owned by the BBC.
Who's owned by
Bob Baker and Dave Baker, Martin?
Yes, who are currently developing a K9 spin-off series of their own.
Oh, is that why?
The BBC. Ironically, though, the BBC own K9's visual appearance. They own the design of K9. They don't own the character himself. So they can...
A bit like the Daleks.
Yes, very much so. So they can negotiate sort of little cameo appearances like this, but they can't use him extensively.
I'm sure they could, it'd just make things more complicated.
Yeah, while the K9 series is in development, I think it's very tricky to sort things out.
We have the most cringe-worthy scene of the whole episode here, when we have the Earth is being pulled back, presumably very quickly, to its original position, and the Earth shapes. And we have the most overdone music ever.
I did quite like this though.
Music is awful.
Why don't all of the oceans slop to the back of the Earth?
What's the moon got to do with any of this? And the tides? Haven't really thought this through, have
they? I did notice.
But never mind that. It's just nitpicking. It's fairy tale in space.
If you can
go with a TARDIS, it's disguised as a police box and bigger on the inside than that. Here it is.
Look, and it's a big camera. Happy family scene as they're all.
Yeah.
It's not fairy tale, it's just very fairy.
It's just cheese, honestly.
but fun is that big happy feel good ending.
They hate big happy feel good.
It didn't feel particularly good though.
I felt being sick.
And why is the moon still there if the Earth hasn't been around to keep it in its orbit?
Well, it's still stay in a similar orbit around the sun.
I don't know if it's
there was a threat about this on Outpost Galaxy. I'll argue the toss with the physics geeks on there.
All right,
who are busy arguing.
We're going to have dinner with a physics geek after we finish this podcast. So
he just rolled his eyes when I mentioned this episode.
I was disappointed that Bernard Cribbins and Sylvia, Donna's mum, didn't have more to do.
Yeah, I was wanting Sylvia to have her big yellow truck moment, like Jackie in.
Look, there is no perceivable damage to the capital cities of the world, and they've all carefully set up fireworks displays whilst trapped. And look, we're in a park, it's sunny, and people are just out walking the dogs.
Presumably some time has passed.
Well, we don't necessarily get that impression because church bells are ringing.
Well, it's TV license.
I think that's a lazy excuse.
It's time passes between scenes.
Couldn't they just put us 3 months later on screen? It would have made it.
No, it's part of the grammar of television. I can forgive them that.
It shouldn't be part of the grammar of television. It doesn't matter.
So.
And at this point, the realisation that Jackie Tyler served literally no function whatsoever in the story.
It's great, we have all the universe, all the multiverses collapsing in themselves, and what do we get? We get Mickey and Jackie.
They could have done anything, couldn't they?
We could have had people...
Alternative Doctor, Alternative Donna.
Alternative Daleks appearing.
Yes, all sorts of stuff.
Maybe rogue Time Lords from outside the time-locked areas. And you could have done multiplicity of things, but no, we get Mickey and Jackie.
and a great big unsubtle hint that, yes, Martha Jones is going to be the new permanent member of the Torchwood team.
And maybe Mickey as well.
Yes. Yeah, this has been muted for a long time, and I didn't think it sounded particularly likely. But,
the main reason to open the universe is to allow shuffling of characters between spin-offs.
That's the reason. I have a nasty feeling that is the only reason, really.
But was the ending is he really necessary?
I do like Noel Clarke. He's a very good actor.
I think his
character wasn't anywhere near rich enough or sympathetic enough, but it's been improving.
Yeah, I do think that Torchwood would be improved massively by the inclusion of Martha and Mickey. If only they could have exterminated the rest of the team and put Bernard Cribbins in charge instead of Captain Jack, then that would be a show I'd watch.
Yes.
David Tennant's quiff is looking remarkable this week.
Battle Bay.
Which, I don't know, I just felt this completely lacked the impact of the end of Series 2scenes we had.
End of Series 2 was heartbreaking, and it was fantastically staged. And this was like a scene from the Hollyoaks, almost. I don't fancy you anymore, but he's a bit like me. Why don't you go with him? Yeah, all right. Bye.
Billy Piper with a gun. We need more of that.
I thought this was going to be the payoff for leaving Rose stranded on a second-rate Earth with a second-rate dad and a second-rate boyfriend at the end of Series 2. She was going to come back triumphantly, and all old wounds were going to be healed. She's going to be restored to a proper place. She's going to be happy. But no, she's been stranded once again on second-rate Earth with a second-rate dad and now a second-rate doctor as well. That's it. Is it just does she only like the doctor for his looks? I mean, good grief.
Well, he has got the same mind, but I did feel that the idea of this other doctor being like the doctor when Rose first met him, that was quite a nice idea. But I don't he didn't come across as different enough in his actions.
No.
The whole, you committed genocide thing,
so did you.
Doesn't quite work.
That was my other self, so it's fine.
The real doctor, is just passing judgment on him, saying, well, he committed genocide, he's got to be locked away somewhere safe. Did the doctor lock himself away anywhere safe? After he had committed genocide, did he stop travelling because he thought he was too dangerous to be allowed loose in the universe? No.
I think that's understandable because he realises what he was and how he's changed since then. Yes. But I do think it shows...
He could have gone easier on the other guy, though, I think.
Yeah.
This scene does at least offer you tremendous opportunities to come up with lines that he could have whispered into her ear. A prize for the funniest, by the way, do email them to us, impossiblepodcast@gmail.com.
And try to keep them reasonably clean.
Well, if you really feel you must. As long as they're funny, we don't mind.
This is a family book. Well, I don't think.
If there are any families out there, good grief, what are you doing? Get out!
If there is anybody who's listening to the age of 16, please email. Well, that's the end of the sentence.
They call me David.
Oh, I love you.
they might do this on Private Eye. The Private Eye for Malone. Yeah.
This is the worst bit. While she's distracted, he buggers off.
Convenient time to slip out. This was rather difficult while this was.
Yeah, not even a goodbye.
Yes, I'm not going to send my paternity payments.
He's not interested in her in the slightest anymore.
Oh, I don't think that at all. I think it's you've got the whole pathos of, it should be him, but he has the burden of the Time Lord, so he has to leave.
It didn't come across to me anyway. I didn't get any of that, I'm afraid.
Oh, I do like Catherine Tate. She's actually a pretty good actress.
And now we're going to approach a scene where Donna is about to die.
This seems rather contrived and tacked on, the whole that she needs a memory wipe.
I think the last 20 minutes have been rather contrived and tacked on.
Yes.
It's like the going away scenes in Return of the King, you know, the last of the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Oh.
The story finishes and then you have just goodbye scene after goodbye scene. It ends and then it ends again and then it ends again and then it ends again.
For the circle of time.
Does this mean that we're going to have a special next year with Charlie Chaplin in it, as he's been name dropped, and we had Agatha Christie name dropped at the end of the last series? That could be quite fun, actually.
Or I could do a silent episode.
A silent movie Doctor Who episode.
Yeah, or at least dialogue free. I think that would be very good indeed.
That would be hilarious.
A dialogue free special.
There is precedent. The Dalek Master Plan, they had the silent movie episode at Christmas.
Well, only parts of it was silent.
Yeah.
But they were quite funny.
But Buffy the Vampire Slayer managed an almost entirely dialogue free episode, which is still one of their best.
Yeah.
And one of their creepiest.
All right.
Hush, it's called. It's fantastically inventive. So I challenge you, Russell T. Davis, if you haven't written it already, give us a dialogue-free, or at least, you know, a largely dialogue-free special next year. And Steve Moffat, if he doesn't do that, then, you know, I throw down the gauntlet to you. Come up with the goods. This carried more emotional impact for me than Rose's Goodbye Song. And contrived as it is, I think the acting carries it on. Mm. She's very good.
It is a very brutal exit for her in a way. Because one of the things I've always, I remember reading the novelisation of the War Games and being really, really upset at the whole idea that you could have all these adventures with the Doctor and Jamie and Zoe had their memories wiped of them.
Yes.
It is heartbreaking.
And the fact that she asks him not to as well, and he carries on to save her.
Well, to be fair, I think the memory wiping in the War Games is actually handled far better.
Yes, I think so as well.
But yeah, why does he have to wipe all her memories? Why can't he just take out the Time Lord stuff?
That's not explained.
Help me, Bernard. Enter the TARDIS and become the new companion.
Yes.
That'd be great.
Oh, it would be fantastic. Why couldn't they have made three...
They ought to have split Bernard Cribbins off into three. So you had...
an extra one.
Three-fold man, so he could be in all the spin-offs.
See, had I been in charge...
And in the main show.
Had I been in charge of this series, Donna's mother wouldn't have been in it at all because she's been entirely superfluous and unlikable. And she's not...
You could have just killed her.
She's not really redeemed by the end of the series, particularly. Despite this one line she gets about, oh, she's my daughter, she's very special. But, you know, good grief, is that the best you can do? I think Donna, you know, the workaday temp, bit bolshy, and Bernard Cribbins, her lovable, adventurous grandfather, who obviously has some sort of military history, possibly in the Navy, has gone out there and seen the world, and has a real boyhood spirit, sense of adventure.
Mm.
The two of them together, travelling with the Doctor, would have been fantastic fun.
I'm not sure whether Bernard Cribbins would have managed an entire series, but I think bringing him along for at least one adventure.
I think it'd be game. I think a slew of them adventures, three or four. Why not?
He would be more interesting than the Supreme Rajaman was in The Doctor's Daughter.
Yes.
Put it that way.
Oh, good grief. Can you imagine? Bernard Cribbins tearing up at the sight of that falling into the paddling pool.
No, come back! In flashbacks of one of his brothers dying in a paddling pool when he was five.
But he acts everyone off the screen here, he really does.
Well, David Tennant's doing it.
Oh, David Tennant's doing very well as well.
He just seems like he just seems like he's a policeman saying, yes, your daughter has died. I could see David Tennant wearing his police uniform at this point.
Yes.
Maybe
you should
tell her that once in a while. Ooh!
What I don't get is, if she's not supposed to remember anything about him, why is it alright for her to just sit there and see him? She doesn't remember him at all. Yeah, he introduces himself. Oh, she's gone all annoying again.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the most upsetting things, is that all the character development is undone.
Yes. but from a dramatic standpoint as well, ultimately it's quite unsatisfying, because we really did warm to her.
And I think
if she'd kept something, if she'd lost her memories and lost the memory of the richness and the adventures that she'd had, but kept her own character, her developed character, that would have been fine. I think you could have had the best of both worlds. As it is now, she's just the woman who gets excited about Pringles.
Yeah, or if there'd been just more to it, if she had done something heroic rather than this just coming about as a result of an accident, basically, then it would have felt more meaningful. It is quite affecting, but it does seem strangely unsatisfying.
Definitely. And watching, this is a very general point, watching the story again for the second time, Swithin's made a very good point. It's been 20 minutes since anything exciting has really happened. It's been 20 minutes since the Daleks and Davros were the sort of scuppered and destroyed and wiped out.
People said the Book of the World was slow.
This is Billy Crippen's, it's worth having this scene with him in.
Yeah.
But they could have trimmed down these ending bits substantially.
Yeah. Oh, Bernard, you deserve a series of your own. You're great. I grew up listening to you sort of narrating children's audio stories, and I thought you were terrific then. All aboard with Bernard Cribbins. That would be a great episode title. All aboard with Bernard Cribbins. As he joins the TARDIS full time.
It sounds like it should be a musical episode, so set on a ship.
Oh, he was a station platform master. And there were steam trains and all sorts of stuff. Oh, it was great.
And then...
The Doctor looking moody and travelling by himself again.
Emo Doctor.
Yes, happened at the end of last series, as I recall.
Ooh.
Which means that there's going to be a Children in Need special sandwiched between this and the Return of the Cybermen. Yes.
Oh dear.
And again, this just goes on slightly too long.
Yeah.
Why is this necessary? Because the Doctor is lonely and upset again.
Yeah. And he's wet. He hasn't even bothered to get himself a towel, he's so upset. There we are.
And then we have the cast list, which is ridiculously long.
It was alright. On a second viewing, it had its moments, definitely.
Yeah, it did.
It was just a bit bloated and flabby and lazy, I think.
What do you mean lazy?
The resolution of the Daleks was just lazy. They were almost sort of shrugged off, as in, well, we don't need them now. Ah, trailer for the Christmas special.
We were a hugely overblown Christmas, coming Christmas 2008, to be continued as last week. Of the Cybermen.
Although that panning shot of them striding through the churchyard at St. Ulrich Cathedral, I thought was rather nice. But overall, I'm on the strength of this, I'm not overly enthusiastic about the Christmas special, because the Christmas specials have now become romps, haven't they? They've become a big adventure set pieces as opposed to continuations of any particular story, which the Christmas Invasion was. But increasingly now, this season finale was a big adventure set piece to a large extent, and very little story. I think we had about 20 minutes of story and an hour and something's worth of episode. But anyway, there we are. That's my
okay.
That's my verdict. Don't know what you guys think.
What's your concluding comments, Swithin?
The story was full of holes. The motivation for characters for doing anything and why they did what they did is non-existent. Murray Gold was good in places, terrible coming back to Earth music. He just wasn't very good. It just seems to the case of, let's bring everybody back and it will work, and it doesn't.
Well, I think one of the things that does work about it is that it does have a tremendous sense of fun, and it's obviously gone down very, very well.
It's supposed to be the end of the universe.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be grim.
I think, once again, they put a sense of fun above any kind of story and integrity of the characters.
This is my point, but the thing is that Russell T. Davies can and has in most of the finales brought together both a sense of occasion but also told a satisfying story. And so I was disappointed because this was the first finale where I didn't find it a satisfying story and resolution.
Found the Dalek Hoover satisfying.
Oops. I thought Doomsday worked, I think. But I do think there has been something of a law of diminishing returns. They keep on trying to up the ante with the finales, and it just does lead to this becoming increasingly bloated. Yeah, I think if they focused on something that was more character-based, and I think the reason that the first finale in Part 2 of the Ways, also Doomsday in particular, works is that they did have a very... an emotional core that worked really well, and I felt that something of the heart of this story was perhaps missing compared to some of the other stories.
So what was everyone's opinion on the season as a whole? How does it rack up with the previous three seasons and the previous 26 also?
Wow, that Stephen Moffat guy, what a writer! The Doctor is being deified! Wow, that Russell T. Davis guy. What a chump.
It's hard to say, because this is the first time that I've actually sat down and rewatched episodes with any kind of particularly critical analysis, because this is the first time we've done the podcast.
Yeah.
I felt this series wasn't up to the standards of what's gone before to a great extent. Everything seemed increasingly thin, really. It goes back to what I was saying about them trying to put a sense of fun above plot and character and integrity. But having said that, there were some cracking episodes. I mean, Midnight was brilliant.
Midnight was by far the best episode of the whole season.
Yes, yeah, that stands out head and shoulders above the rest. But in every
episode... It didn't have much to stand above, though.
Well, no, in some cases, it also this series also showcased, I think, the worst episode of New Doctor Who that they've produced, which was The Doctor's Daughter.
It's up there, isn't it? Well, down there.
And just the most generic and drab story, which was the Sontaran two-parter halfway through, which wasn't interesting enough to be bad, particularly.
It was just there.
Yeah, it just filled the airwaves of 45
minutes.
Every episode had its moments, let me say that.
Billy Piper with a gun. I want an action figure of Billy Piper with a gun.
I think there was at least one good idea in every single episode and one nice scene between the main characters in every single episode. Mostly, though, they've all, with the exception of Midnight and I think the Steve Moffat two-parter, they've all faded from my memory. It's becoming increasingly disposable television, I think, which is a worrying trend.
But interestingly, it has been the most successful in terms of ratings and audience appreciation, strangely enough. Which is odd, because I think I probably would agree that I felt this series was a little weak. I don't think it had the standout episodes in quite the same way as previous series had. There wasn't a Blink or a Family of Blood, or going back to the previous series, Girl in the Fireplace or the Satan Pit, or in each series right the way through. I think there were some standout episodes, and this didn't... It was solidly entertaining, but I felt it didn't, particularly with the Sontaran story, for example, it did feel a bit more familiar, not adding anything more to the mix. It feels like it's settled into a definite formula by this stage, and I think that just made it seem that bit less interesting me this time round.
It did feel as if it was just repeating itself in places. Mm-hmm. Again, and I think the Sontaran two-parter is the biggest example of that, because we'd seen everything in that before.
I think it's certainly the weakest of the new comeback seasons by quite a way. Also, what I'd like to try and compare it to is the original season 4, because I've always tried to compare because of essentially starting afresh and comparing them. So if you look at the original season 4, which you have Pat Troughton appearing originally, and so Billy Hartnell, he's still a lot better. Because what you have in there, you have the 10th planet, you have Power and Evil of the Daleks.
Yes.
You also have the Faceless Ones, which is very good. Granted, you do have the Underwater Menace, which is terrible. You go and rewatch those and get the reconstructions or listen to the audio, and you'll find more invention in season 4 than you have found in the whole of this. I guarantee you. Okay. If you don't agree with me, you can email me.
Okay, well, we better wrap this, bring things to a close. We will return after a break with commentaries on previous stories, both from the series after its return and also the classic series. So
potentially some Sarah Jane Adventures commentary as well.
And the spin-offs. So stay tuned. Before we go, we just have... we were wondering what would happen if the Daleks had actually succeeded in their plans to destroy all the rest of reality. And it might go something like this.
I, Davros, am now lord of all creation. What shall we do next? I spy with my little eye something beginning with D. Could it by any chance be Dalek? How did you guess? Dalek Khan foretold it. Ooh-hoo. I flew into the future, into the wilds, and so he was spied Daleks. That is cheating! Exterminate! Exterminate! Exterminate!
Okay, thank you for listening. Email us at impossiblepodcast@gmail.com. Happy times and places.
That's all we have time for. Thank you very much. But genuinely, I am really looking forward to getting that action figure.